Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of M365 Voice. My name is Sarah Hazzi.
And I am Mike Madarani.
I'm Antonio Maya.
Welcome to another episode, and this is going to be the first episode in a series that we're going to be doing about Copilot.
Right? Yay.
Awesome.
We've got a lot of topic ideas floating around about Copilot, and I think that they're going to come out in no particular order necessarily, as in whatever order that we want to talk to them about. And today's session idea started with bad words. or at least that's what I'm going to say. If you've ever listened to our podcast before, sometimes the most interesting things are the things that occur before Mike starts recording and before he starts the transcription, because that's when I get out all of the bad words that I was going to say. before my mother starts listening. So we were talking about that and talking about brainstorming ideas for other episodes. And that's when we decided that what we should really talk about first is a code of ethics around Copilot. And should organize, of course, we can start off talking about Microsoft's responsible AI stance, but then talking specifically about organizations that are going to be leveraging Copilot, should you create or should you have a code of ethics around it, and what kinds of things might you put in there? That's the introduction, starting with bad words, ending with code of ethics. What do you think?
I think that's awesome.
It all comes down to the transcriptions that puts all these rules in place, I guess.
That's right. And as we have previously said, HR on this podcast is run by Antonio and Mike. So they let
Not
me know
Sarah.
If I've gone too far. So code of ethics, do we want to start with Microsoft's take on responsible AI? Because they've been very specific about that ever since they have announced Copilot, and in every video and presentation, they talk about that.
Absolutely. So Microsoft came out with the responsible AI framework. You sometimes see it called RAI in some of the documentation. And that is, for me, that's two things. That is a set of principles that Microsoft uses in building all of its AI technologies and releasing all of its AI technologies. And the second is, it's actually a set of checks that are performed, pre-processing and post-processing checks that are involved, that are performed when you use Copilot. And it's looking for a bunch of things.
Yeah, I think it's good to make that difference and to explain the pre and post, because it's going to go and analyze your prompt, it's going to analyze your question and see if it breaks those rules or principles, and then it answers back differently. Or post and says, oh, I'm getting back all those results. Is this set of data that I'm getting back from those large language models, are they breaking my responsible AI principles?
Mm-hmm.
So if we start with the principles that responsible AI framework sets out, it sets out principles for fairness, transparency, inclusiveness, avoiding bias, avoiding harmful language, what else?
Security, I think, and privacy as well.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Good point. Yeah. Keeping your data secure, maintaining the privacy of your data.
Mm-hmm. And accountability, I think.
Yes. Absolutely.
So then, if we're going to go a step farther than that, I have heard some interesting conversations about organizations as they're looking to either pilot or enable Copilot. And by that, I mean, from an enterprise perspective, Copilot for Microsoft 365, do they need to expand their code of ethics in terms of employee usage of Copilot for Microsoft 365, or have some other type of acceptable usage agreement or something like that that pertains specifically to Copilot?
Absolutely. I would, so from what I've seen, and our company did this, I've seen other companies do this too. They've done exactly what you said, but a little bit more generically. So they're not doing specifically for Copilot, they're extending it for generative AI in general. Because some people can choose to use other generative AI tools that are available for free on the internet or Copilot. So sometimes it comes in the form of extending the acceptable use policy to include generative AI, because most of them are written before generative AI was a thing. And then others create a policy specifically for generative AI. And it includes a few, from what I've seen, a few important components around which generative AI tools are acceptable for our organization to use. Is it acceptable to go use ChatGPT or Claude or...
And that means on any device, Gemini. Because exactly. It isn't just about what you allow access on your devices for your company and your employees, but what could they pick up their personal phone, type in that is company information into ChatGPT, let's say, and then be able to take that back and use it for work. So, yeah.
Exactly.
So if you want to explain a little bit more on that topic, if you are allowed or not from a corporate policy to use the ChatGPT from a personal device or organizational device, what is the rule here, or what is the concern from the organization to use it or not to use it? Is it because you're trying to gather or send information about the company's data and then bring back some of the results back, or?
So many of the free generative AI tools out there don't make any commitments around data privacy and security, right? So if I take one of my clients' information and I go put it in Gemini, for example, I have no guarantee from Google that they're going to not use that client data to train their models. Right. That doesn't exist.
Exactly.
And depending on what industry you're in, if you're in the healthcare industry, you know, you might have HIPAA. If you're in the financial industry, you might have FINRA guidelines that are very specific, not only for generally what you can do, but what specific types of users in your organization or specific types of employees can and cannot do, or what has to be monitored.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of the main concern around what kind of data are people going to put into it, and where does that data go? And is that generative AI tool compliant with the regulations that Sarah mentioned, for example, which are some of the key ones, but there's a lot of different regulations out there. Some of those tools are hosted in other countries around the world as well. So, and you have no idea where some of them are hosted or you're accessing when it's just on the internet. So yeah, that's one of the key things. Which generative AI tool is our company permitted to use? That's usually an important aspect of it. The second is, what kind of data are people allowed to include in it? Am I allowed to use client data in a generative AI tool? Am I not? That's usually the key thing. But healthcare data is a great point, Sarah. Financial services data is another great point. And there's lots of different examples of that. So what kind of data am I permitted to use with it? And what am I not? That's kind of a second important factor.
And it might be, and I've heard you say this before, Antonio, it's not just about can we use it in general, but the types of data in your organization. Can you use it on general data versus the more sensitive or confidential or highly confidential data?
That's right.
And think about this from an information protection perspective, sensitivity labeling and things like that. You might have different rules of the road for your different data types.
Exactly. There is often regulations in these kinds of ethic, code of ethics or acceptable use policy or generative AI that say do not input sensitive data or personal information or personal health information into a generative AI tool. Usually it's pretty blanket, don't do this kind of rule that I've seen. Another aspect of these policies are if you're a consulting organization or an organization that provides some sort of services to other customers, verify within your contracts with those customers, am I permitted to use a generative AI tool? Am I permitted to use an AI tool when I'm delivering services to them? Because some of them may prevent that, right? So it is worth verifying within your contracts with your customers, am I allowed to actually do this, depending on the nature of your work? And then another, and this one's a key one for me, is to always verify or validate the responses you're getting from a generative AI tool before you action them, or before you use it in a client deliverable, or before you make some decision based on it.
I call that the Wikipedia use in educational papers example.
You nailed it with Wikipedia. You could tell, actually, when you go and you read a sentence or a paragraph, I'm like, that does not sound human. There's a lot of fancy words there. And that those mm-hmm. the first paragraph contradicts with the second one. It's like, oh.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
With generative AI, it's important to recognize that many of these large language models, and different large language models are different, right? But if I think of GPT, for example, it is not optimized for accuracy, right? Mm. It is optimized to give you a conversational response. It's going to give you the next best conversational word or sentence or response. It is a statistical prediction engine, nothing more. It is not going to necessarily be accurate. Now, it's getting better, and there are some generative AI tools out there that purport to focus on accuracy. Claude, for example, is one that does that. But ChatGPT doesn't make that claim. Copilot doesn't make that claim.
And that's so important because I think over time, and here's the thing, how do you produce this code of ethics? And let me give you a couple of examples. A lot of companies that I have worked with in the past have a once a year code of ethics sign off. You review the document. And when I say review, some people give it a very detailed read through. Some people scan it. Some people simply use the scroll bar on their mouse to get to the bottom so they can say, I acknowledge. Other tools that I've seen people, and I've actually been part of, creating and modifying social media policies specifically for tools like Viva Engage, where then you have an acceptable usage policy that maybe every time that you update it, the first time someone goes into that tool, they need to scroll through it and use it. The hard part with Copilot is the over time, the distance between when someone, did they actually review it? Do they actually remember what's in there? And over time, as they use, and as if they use Copilot effectively and they become more accustomed to, dependent on, whatever you want to use, will they get further and further away from that ethical stance?
Right.
Yeah. There's the potential for that.
Yeah. Now, what I've seen some companies do is when they do, because this is such a significant policy change, right? I personally, I don't remember the last time we had such a significant change to acceptable use policies where it's such a big thing. What I've seen some companies do is they update the policy very much like what you said. And often that's a legal group that is reviewing and updating it and validating the policy. They have everyone in the organization go through a training program that talks about all the stuff in the policy. And then at the end of it, you have to accept the acceptable use policy for generative AI. So companies are doing, you know, the appropriate, I'll say, putting the appropriate effort in to make sure that people, as much as possible, review that policy, understand it, and accept it.
And to that point, in like in any technology we have worked with, you have, I would say, three different type of people that are very conservative, that really don't trust AI, they're not going to use it. And then people that are very, very open. And this is where you have to basically look at the code of conduct and the user's policy. They trust AI and they don't really validate anything and they input anything they want and they get all the output they want. And you have the people in the middle that's just, yes, I'm going to take advantage of AI responsibly and validate what I get. And I want to be responsible in what I send and what I try to gather information and really make sure that whatever I'm getting is something that it's acceptable by myself or by the company or the policy that we have in place.
Yeah. And I think these things go beyond a policy in that, I think the policy is important. You've got to do that. I think a training program for everyone's important and requiring them to go through it. I wouldn't make the training program overly onerous. It shouldn't be an hour-long training program, for example. Something short and to the point and succinct. But then I think this also factors into your communications and adoption programs around generative AI so that you're reinforcing those messages that are from the acceptable use or code of ethics policy. You're reinforcing them in your comms in language that people understand.
Welcome to change management, responsible user adoption.
Yeah.
Maybe we just coined a whole new phrase. Antonio, I can see it now. I can see it. It's a session, it's a workshop, it's a super training series on responsible adoption.
Yeah, totally. It's a great idea.
I think
responsible adoption.
I think that is a great place. Any final thoughts as we wrap up? I think this was a great start to a Copilot series.
Yeah. I think this is a really good topic for us to start the series on, because before rolling out Gen AI, this is a kind of foundational element to make sure everyone knows what to do with it and how to use it responsibly.
And what not to do with it.
Yeah.
And what not to be more responsible than the responsible AI. That's what I say.
Oh, that sounds like a parenting tip.
Yeah, it does. Eh?
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope to see you back on a future episode.
All right.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.